If you travel for your job, now you're going to have some more options when you book flights. The General Services Administration adding more than 700 destinations to its City Pairs program, as well as three new carriers. Feds now will be able to book flights on Continental, Hawaiian, and Southwest, in addition to 10 other airlines currently under the program. Timothy Burke is director of GSA's Office of Travel and Transportation Services. He joins us now with details of this program and how you can take advantage of it. Mr. Burke, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Amy.
So, first of all, just background, remind us all how the City Pairs program works.
Okay, thanks for the opportunity to talk to you guys and everybody in the listening audience. The United States GSA City Pair program has been around for the 31 years, since 1980. It's sort of an interesting time for us here and going into the 2011 season. In 1980, there were 16 markets that we went to. The most busiest market we had was the Atlanta DCA market, Washington Reagan. And today, that still remains the busiest market we have. But there were four airlines. You probably heard of Eastern Airlines. You might have heard of Piedmont. You might have heard of United and American. Two of those remain, and that's United and American. And today, we have 13 carriers that are part of that. So we have almost 2 million users on an annualized basis. It's an annual program. We contract into the 5,700 markets that we're into this year. Every 12 months, our program team gets together with industry and the customers, try to identify their requirements, where they're traveling to or where they forecast they're traveling to, and go out and compete those markets one market at a time. We have a relatively complex and scientific algorithm we use to measure the convenience of flight time so that our travelers can do it in a safe and convenient and a practical way, and then we compare that against price and the types of services that the airlines offer in that particular marketplace.
And I still have my Pan Am luggage tags, by the way. I don't think they're too identifiable anymore, but I've got them.
Well, that's interesting, Tom. I've still got a bunch of artifacts on my shelves as well.
Yeah, and we could go on that. Just give us a sense of the scope of the program. How many miles do federal employees fly on these city pairs, and what's the value of it? Do you have those statistics?
That's a great trivia question. I think I'm going to post that up to the program team if they're listening this morning. The actual miles, I think we could calculate. We've never done it, but I can frame it for you the following way. There's 10 million segments that our travelers fly every year on an annualized basis. The amount of the value of the contract spend on those 10 million segments across the globe is $2.9 billion. There's a savings of almost $6 billion every year when those contract fares are negotiated. So it has a significant value to taxpayers and to the agencies as they manage their budget.
So let's talk about the ticketing flexibility, how feds can take advantage of this, and what they have to do to participate.
I think one of the unique elements of the program, Amy, is that the government is still afforded a very unique flexibility around its ticketing, its exchange fees. You guys might be familiar with all the many different fees that airlines put on consumers and travelers today. But for the federal government, we're still able to negotiate buying these fares at the last minute. We have last seat availability on each of the airlines, which means if there's still a seat to sell in the airplane, the federal traveler can realize that savings at the negotiated agreement. It's a firm fixed price. Our fees never go up. And you might have also heard that during this summer that many of the airlines want to charge peak travel day fees. On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, busy travel days, they were adding $10 and $20, $30 to each one-way ticket. When the United States federal traveler travels, they don't pay any of those fee increases. So there's flexibility. They can change their tickets. If they've got a last-minute mission change, which happens very, very often for many of our travelers, they can change those tickets. Without any questions asked, the airlines will accept them. There's no fees that go along with that.
We're talking with Timothy Burke, director of the General Services Administration's Office of Travel and Transportation Services. So in effect, to summarize the benefits to the federal government, you get the most advanced fares that are available, and yet you get the privileges of people that walk up and pay full fare.
That's correct, Tom. You couldn't say it much better than that. I think the other side of this is that when, you know, a federal traveler can get these tickets issued at any point in time, we try to drive the programs through the official channels, which are the travel agencies, the online booking tools through e-travel and the defense travel system. But the independent airlines across the globe will accept any federal traveler with orders and the form of payment that is required for them to be accepted by the airlines, which is the SmartPay program that GSA today issues out across 2 million different travelers. I also want to let you know that the federal community that can use this program is not just the federal traveler at a particular agency or Department of Defense. It also includes the Postal Service, includes Congress, and it does include the Native American tribes and tribal organizations.
And just because the question comes up, are these privileges available to people on personal travel, or is it strictly for official business?
Now, one of the benefits of us having this long-term contract and sustaining these unique benefits to the federal travelers, I think the airlines have always put their business and patriotic steps first. It's only for official travel.
Were there any specific criteria that airlines had to meet to be involved in this program, and how did you go about picking and choosing?
Well, I think the criteria Amy best described is they have to be certified within the U.S. structure, which includes the Department of Defense and the Department of Transportation and FAA's requirements for safety and capacity. That's a far-reaching set of requirements. These are U.S. flag carriers. The United States government does not award contracts to anyone but U.S. flag carriers, both for domestic travel and for international travel. And the process of which we go about choosing, it's very interesting process. It's very data-driven. We use four or five different data sources to understand what our travelers did in the past year and the years prior to that. And then we also solicit our individual customers for any changes they forecast in their travel patterns for the upcoming year. We then place that into a relatively complex data-driven algorithm that evaluates the rates against the service and the times of day and when they travel and the frequency of the amount of trips, let's say, between here in Chicago or here in Atlanta. We want to award to an airline that has the capacity to meet our requirements. For example, between here and Atlanta, we see more than 75 to 100,000 segments a year, so we want to award to a carrier that has enough capacity to be able to meet those requirements.
So any chance of using that federal buying power to bring back shrimp cocktail and champagne?
Great question, Tom. I would have to say as long as you bring your credit card on board, you'll be able to order that shrimp cocktail down the road.
Yeah, when pigs fly along with the planes, I guess. Well, thanks very much for joining us. It's a fascinating update, and we'll hope it goes well for you.
We appreciate it. Thanks for putting us on the air.
And that's Timothy Burke, Director of General Services Administration's Office of Travel and Transportation Services.